It's another Friday, and welcome to the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted, where Jeremy, my son and business partner, and I, John Zogby, take a look at the news of the week, especially the political news, and then let the conversation go into a direction where we talk about what the polls, our polls in particular, are really saying about mood of the American people now and what this portends for the future. And before I start, Jerry, a reminder that this is not just another Friday. It's the 19th anniversary of the horrible events of 9/11, something that is etched in our minds forever and ever. And I remember you were a freshman in college at that point, and the horrible impact that it had even on our lives as well. But how are you doing this week, Jer?
I'm doing very well. And I was thinking about that yesterday. I was already in a major transition in life, transitioning out of being a high school student who had no other care in the world but to socialize and be around friends, to someone who took up the quest for knowledge as the main quest. And then, of course, 9/11 happened right in the middle of all of that. And I know it made me a different person and gave me a different outlook. And I know members of my generation, many others as well, but not just the millennials, really everybody who was alive at that time.
It was a defining moment, to be sure. And so let's segue and talk about this week in politics, as we always have. And of course, we begin, I believe, with a bombshell of the week, and that is the Bob Woodward book, Rage, which, as in the past with his books, has been leaking out steadily but surely. And not terribly good news what's revealed about President Donald Trump. And so just to rehash a couple of highlights, you know, one is the revelation that Trump really knew or admits that he knew about the seriousness of the COVID-19 virus as early as the latter part of January of this year, but opted to take a much different public approach, a very different public approach, by playing it down, by not listening to the scientists, and in his own words, not wanting to create a panic. Juxtaposing those comments about what he claimed he knew privately versus what he was saying publicly, could prove to be something very damaging to him and his presidency remains to be seen. The other revelation in the book is Woodward's interviews with colleagues at the White House, including prominent cabinet members like James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, and all, who claimed that they were on constant alert, feeling that the president, as others have said, was not up to the job, was a bit of a rogue and a dangerous personality, and who could lead the United States ultimately into a very serious situation. So far, we see no impact on the polls. If anything, president's still doing fairly well, an average 44% approval rating. And in the head-to-head matchups nationally against former Vice President Joe Biden, seems to be sort of in the mix. Some polls showing him at 3-4% down, other polls showing him at 7-8% down, but really nothing having changed in that direction. So tell me, do you think that the revelation of Bob Woodward and his new book could have a serious impact on the Trump presidency or on this race at all?
Wow. It's the reality is the way people consume. Well, it starts from the top down, the way news is filtered, the way it's presented and then the way people consume it. So on the Democratic side, this is going to further rally the Biden supporters and even those undecided who are leaning towards Biden to say, look at the failed leadership. Now we were pretty certain before. Now we know there's the smoking gun that this president is unfit. He's not a leader. But in the other world, in the other perception of reality that's on the Republican side, or you could say the pro-Trump side, this could be shared or understood as Anthony Fauci and those crop of people were downplaying it in February, but yet personally, the president knew about the seriousness of the virus. Now, that's just the one revelation that we're dealing with here. The other one regarding James Mattis, a member of Trump's cabinet, the revelation to my knowledge is that there's a quote from Mattis that in speaking with an unnamed high level intelligence officer, that there needs to be quote unquote collective action. And if we interpret that collective action, sounds a lot like a coup from within. And so what I'm thinking as of now, and of course this could all change because the news moves at the speed of light, it seems to be that Trump could go to his base and reinvigorate them and drive home the point, I'm the non-establishment character. I'm the non-establishment candidate. He was doing this in 2015 and 2016, and it looked to be that he didn't drain the swamp, but maybe for a window of 3 or 4 weeks before this bit of news gets old, like it tends to do in our you know system of media, in those 3 or 4 weeks, this could potentially excite his base and maybe some of the independents to say, look, there's been a coup from the other side, the Democrats, and then there's been a kind of a coup from within my party, and it could maybe work in a way where it makes the president look like he's a target. And because he's a moving target from all sides within DC, that could have some appeal to it. I'm trying to sort this all out though, as it's coming out. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm trying to sort it out too. Whatever it is, it's not a pretty picture, you know, and against the president, you try to think back similar situations. Seriously, Paul Revere saying, well, you know what, let's sleep on it. You know, I know the British are coming, but really, how much impact could a 100 or so redcoats have on us? Well, I don't think I need to notify anyone until maybe it gets closer. Winston Churchill had been talking for years about the seriousness of the military buildup and the bleeding that was going on in the Eastern and Central Europe. But imagine his, as the new prime minister, going to the British people and saying, you know, let's just be patient and see how this all develops. It's not a good sign as far as a presidential leadership is concerned. And I think he's got a hard argument to the president, hard argument to make. However, we deal in the world of polls, and at least for now, it's not having any impact on the polls. And seriously, I doubt that it will, for the very reasons that you mentioned. I think the sides are drawn. We're left with 5 to 7% who are genuinely undecided. Will this impact them or not? Many of them may very well include those who are just turned off by both sides, don't like either candidate. And this can be fodder for them. Well, this is the reason I don't like Trump. Wait till next week and I'll have more reasons to not like Biden. And they may not show up to vote. But for now, we've got a competitive presidential race. And the more I watch the news, the more I say to myself, Biden is going to have to stick with not only the coronavirus and the economy. More importantly, though, history tells me the man with the smiley face, the sense of optimism, the empathy who says, I can feel your pain, that's the person who normally gets elected. And right now, even if it's all negative, this campaign has been on Donald Trump's terms. And he has a very special way of turning negative news, as you point out, Jer, into news all about him.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that this has legs.
Yeah, it'll be talked about for the next couple of few weeks, but then it'll get lost unless there's other revelations that Woodward comes out with. But I mean, in reality, it just shows of the gross incompetence in general in leadership in Washington, D.C. You know, you can't just point to Trump. You have to look at the other public figures that have emerged in light of COVID-19, including Anthony Fauci, who, you know, who a lot of people believe was downplaying it in February, just as the president was. But I mean, beyond that, we have an exciting new poll that we talked about last week. You know, we hadn't gone into the field yet as of last Friday. I believe we went into the field the very next day, but this has been circulating around. And this is, I mean, to my knowledge, in recent times, this is the largest survey done of likely Black voters. So, Dad, why don't you give some of the highlights and let's talk about that. Let's talk about how obviously this is going to have a major impact on who wins in November, right?
Well, it could very well if these numbers hold. So just, you know, a quick backgrounder, as we've mentioned, I think, in the podcast many times before, typically a Republican candidate gets about 10% of the nationwide vote among Black Americans. There have been exceptions. Ronald Reagan would get a little bit more. And of course, that would all be added to his bottom line. But the benchmark is in 2008, 2012, when Barack Obama won first 96% of a much larger Black turnout. And in the 2012, he came back and won 93% of a still even larger total Black turnout. Hillary Clinton won 89% to Trump's 8% among Black Americans, but the turnout wasn't so high, and in particular in some key battleground states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, all of which she lost and he won. But our poll of 600 Black American voters shows Joe Biden leading 81% to 14% to just about 5% who are undecided. And if those numbers hold, they could have a devastating impact on the Biden candidacy. First of all, those are 14%, or let's say an additional 5 percentage points over Trump's performance, could mean an awful lot of lost Democratic votes. And again, it wouldn't take very many lost Black votes in those three states to turn the tide of the Electoral College. It also, to a great degree, could change the fortunes of Biden in a state like Georgia, where Democrats are hoping that with a big Black turnout, they can flip Georgia into the blue column, possibly even Texas as well. That's the first part of it. Second part of it is, if these numbers do hold, so 14% total, what is driving that? Why is Trump doing better? When we first started seeing from smaller subsamples, Trump doing fairly well among Black voters, we speculated that it could be that this is before COVID, Black Americans were back to work or working, you know, so were Latino Americans as well. And the president was touting that. Post-COVID, we know that's not the case. And then with Black Lives Matter, we know that there is a unity among Black Americans. Our poll shows 85% or thereabouts who support Black Lives Matter. But final point, when we look at these numbers, they seem to be driven by young Black men, in particular. Young Black men giving up to 33% of their support to Donald Trump. We don't have an exact answer for that, but that's certainly what our numbers are showing at this point in time. And I'd be curious as to what you may think is driving that among young Black men. Older voters, clearly and absolutely with the Democratic Party, starts to lessen a little bit the younger you get. But when you get to 18 to 29-year-old Black men, particularly 18 to 24-year-old Black men, the numbers supporting Trump, are stunning.
They are stunning. And I don't know if that's the Kanye effect. I think it's bigger than that. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's bigger than that. But just a brief primer on polling. As you pointed out, about a third of young Black men, particularly 18 to 24, that's Gen Z, by the way, who say that they would vote for Trump. With that sample size, when zeroing down to it, that's about 76 respondents in our survey of 600. And we have in our methodology statement, as a rule, we don't report on numbers less than 70. That's the magic number when you get into subgroups. As far as, you know, we wouldn't go lower than that in our analysis mentioning it. This is at 76 that crosses that threshold, but we make the point that our analysis of subgroups this size is qualitative at best. So just looking at the margin of error on a number of 76 respondents out of a survey of 600, that's a margin of error of plus or minus 11%. So in effect, it could be 44%. That say that would vote for Trump, or 22. Either way you slice it, it's pretty remarkable. It's counterintuitive to what you would normally think. But what I think what's going on here is, and we've been studying and closely following Gen Z, is that they are by and large colorblind. It's not to say that they don't have a heightened awareness of racism. Of course they know what racism is, they know the devastating effects of it. But even more so, their experience is integration. Most Gen Z, if they've gone to a public school, have been alongside other members of other religions, ethnic backgrounds, other racial backgrounds. And it not only do you see this in advertising, but you see it in the real world if you drive through, whether it's the inner city or even the suburbs in some parts of the country. Groups of kids, diverse, all getting along and being friends. It's not to say that racism doesn't exist within Gen Z. I'm sure it does, but to a much lesser degree. So it's not so much about, color with Gen Z as it is maybe about character. So what is it about that supposed 33%? Remember, with a margin of error of 11%, it could be 22, it could be 44. But what is it about that group within the young Black 18 to 24-year-old males that really like Trump? There's another trend of Gen Z, it's very popular among them, is the appreciation for entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And of course, Gen Z, for those who have older siblings that are millennials, and a lot of them do, they've witnessed their older brothers and sisters crippled by the financial crisis, by student loan debt, by even credit card debt. And there is a large percent of Gen Z that would prefer, I can't give a number off the top of my head, but would prefer to go into apprenticeships versus higher ed, and would prefer to get involved in entrepreneurship. And of course, Trump at the end of the day is, I guess you could say, in many regards, a common face in the world of business and entrepreneurship. So it could be that dynamic that attracts them. That here's a guy who built himself and is a successful businessman. That's my take on it. But as you alluded to in your previous analysis, we know that the 65 plus turn out to vote. We know that the 50 plus voters turn out to vote. It's usually the question of the youth and the black vote that when they are excited, boy, do they turn out. But when they're not so certain about either candidate, there tends to be lesser numbers in terms of turnout. But what happens when it's the black 18 to 24 year old vote? What is going to happen with that vote? What could Trump or Biden say to motivate them to get out? And I think that's the major trend to look for between now, or a major trend to look for between now and November, as to what messaging and what strategies both candidates lay out to excite that base.
So let me build on what you just laid out, because I like it and I agree with it. So here's what I'm looking at. One is Trump's very point that it is a black run cities. Many of the cities where there is trouble, many cities where there is no trouble, but still high black unemployment, youthful black unemployment, are run by Democrats. And so here is the president saying, don't expect help from the federal government. It's the cities, and they're the ones who are responsible, and they're messing up your life. Now, one thing we also know about Gen Z blacks as well, they're not very trusting of any institutions. And so where possibly could their focus be? It could be on the fact that our cities are being misled. We already know our country isn't, but our cities are being misled. The other thing, as you point out, is that there is this strain in Black American history where almost every generation we have a swing back and forth from a push for civil rights and a push for equal rights, and then a backing off and a sense that, hey, look, if we're going to make progress as a community, we have to take things into our own hands. A self-help, a self-determination, a go it alone, strengthen our own communities from within, a push for entrepreneurship. This, we shouldn't necessarily read too much into the polling numbers yet, but this is enough, I think, to make us look and to make us wonder, could there really be a turning point here among young blacks, particularly young black men, who are saying, you know what, I'm just fed up. This is my responsibility. And I'm not, in this race, I'm going to strike out against my local leadership, including in some instances, my own black police chief. You see the black police chiefs, several of whom are being forced to resign given various riotous situations in their community.
You hit the nail on the head, because I just looked at the data and we asked that very question. Mm-hmm. Which of the following comes closest to your view? In order for a community, this is statement A, in order for a community to advance, engaging local, state, and federal agencies that support communities is necessary. I think that goes along with that one part of the dichotomy of pushing for equal rights, focusing on civil rights, and a lot of this being through political power and through utilization of federal agencies that offer grant money for development of inner city programs and inner city infrastructure. Versus statement B, in order for a community to advance, it should not rely on grant money, but rather focus on developing the grassroots from within. Now, because you taught Black history and you taught a lot of the Black history to me, that started out, that whole dichotomy started out with Du Bois versus Booker T. Washington. I could say, maybe you would agree, you probably would agree that it replayed out in the 60s in terms of the dichotomy between Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X. And maybe it's playing out again today. And so I'm looking at the numbers, and overall, 63% agreed with the former statement, statement A, that you need to engage local, state, and federal agencies to support the communities for in order for the communities to advance, versus 21% who agreed with statement B, that they should not rely on grant money, but they should develop from within, build from the grassroots up. But when you drill down to the 18 to 24, it's 47 versus 43%. Mm. So there is a strong lean towards that grassroots, towards that developing from within, coming from the youth vote. You were spot on.
All of this warrants more research, but in the meantime, we're certainly going to be watching these numbers. And in other words, you know, to just put a cap on this for now, we're going to be watching, because we may have something epical or generational taking place here, and not just simply a question of a preference between Democrats and Republicans or Biden and Trump. There may be something brewing just within the dynamic of the Black community or in broad communities in general. But I think, boy, we got into a lot of depth on this one. And now, how do we find out more about this poll, Jer, if those of you who are listening?
Well, on the 15th, issue 8 of the Intelligencer will be coming out. And initially, I was going to dedicate the 8th issue to the Black vote, but because of the explosive revelations of Bob Woodward's book and some of the things that have been floating around in the news, I figured, you know, I can't just focus on the Black vote. So I'm going to try and tie everything together. And that's going to come out on the 15th. And that, again, that will be issue 8. So please look out for that. And as always, we'll continue to track this, and we'll see what happens between now and next week. And one thing for sure is we'll be on top of it.
And we'll be back. Okay, good show. And thanks again to Ryan Miller, our producer, and let me hint that we may be going video sometime in the near future, which means I have to put a real shirt on. Okay. Sorry, too much information there. In any event, we'll see you, or you'll be hearing us next week. Thanks.
Take care, everyone.
Have a good week.